Hi and welcome to Know Your Kanoon. This is Amber from EM Nana Ventures. Welcome to this episode. We are going to continue where we left in the last episode on the contempt of court. So I'm going to break down and now talk about the different portions as to contempt. So the first one is civil contempt and criminal contempt. Right, starting with civil contempt, let's see what this particularly entails in detail. Civil contempt, as per Section 2A of the Contempt of Court Act 1971, is willful disobedience to the order, decree, direction, judgment, or writ of court, or breach of undertakings by a person given to a court. Right, since civil contempt deprives the party of the benefit for which the order was made, so these types of contempts or offences are officially, essential of private nature. And they are offences essential to the private nature. Thus, in other words, if I would like to say, a person who is entitled to get the benefit of the court order, this wrong is generally done to this person. Right? So, a pretty simple summary that civil contempt is between two parties an order is awarded as a civil remedy, and that order is not able to be enforced due to various activities by doing undoing of a particular party which offends the court on that level or the enforcement of that order. That leads to this particular section being evoked. There are certain defenses to civil contempt, right? Where I can say they cannot be arbitrary in nature, that once the act is done, you are punished outrightly without giving or being given a chance, since it's a civil matter, right? And a degree of negligence is something which is existing in these matters. So what are these defenses to civil contempt that exist? So let's look at some of the defenses. First is lack of knowledge of the order. Right, a person cannot be held liable as per law for a contempt of court if he does not know the order given by the court, or in case if he claims or states that he was unaware of the order. So thus, pretty much simple, I cannot be convicted of an offence I am not aware of. This is the first ground which is highlighted by the Act. It says that there is a duty binding on the successful party by the courts that the order that has passed should be served to the individual by post or personally through the certified copy. That is the mode of communication of these orders for knowledge purposes of the affected parties, right? Thus, there can be a successful plead, or there could be a successful ground which can be raised by the contemner that the certified copy of the order was not formally served to him or was not received. Though that may happen in some cases, but in most cases that rarely stands true, right? The second ground I'd like to come to is the disobedience or the breach which has happened should not be. Now, I'll break it, rephrase it, and explain to you what it is. If someone is pleading under this defense, then he can say the act done by him was not done willfully. What it means is that the individual against whom, or the contemner against whom the order has been passed for contempt, he can take the ground that whatever he did not do willfully. It was an accident, or it was in such circumstances which were beyond his control, or something as a defense which is being used around the world globally is the defense of automatism, where due to him being impaired of his senses, he did something. Impairment of senses does not include drinking of alcohol. It could be a reason that the individual is not mentally well or is sick, and there are pangs of such periods or episodes that tend to make him behave in a particular way in which he did. It can only succeed, this defense, only and only if it is found to be reasonable. Otherwise, this is a very, very soft defense, I would say, but still a tenable one in the court of laws. Now, coming to the third one is the order which has been disobeyed should be vague or ambiguous. There's a simple principle of law: anything that is vague, which is not clear, which is ambiguous, which does not clearly mention what it intends to do or how it tends to operate, does not mention who it's going to affect, all these ambiguities or vagueness in the orders can be taken up and are a valid defense, and such a law in any case is inoperative, right? So when such an order is passed enforcing a particular act or not, or where the court has passed an order in pursuance of such proceedings of contempt, related to a discussion, etc. If it's not clear what it's related to, if it is vague in its existence, it cannot stand, right? Then the person, I'll name a case law, in fact, to that effect. In this, it is state of Himachal Pradesh versus R.N. Ramol, right? Pretty simple case law. In this case, this defense was taken up by the respondent. The Supreme Court, in fact, had directed the corporation of the respondent to restore the promotion of the petitioner from a particular date in the service. And the respondent actually did not produce the monetary benefit for the given period, and a complaint was filed against him for contempt of court. The gentleman pleaded for the defense on the given evidence that it has not been mentioned by the court in order to pay the monetary benefit. So I've just given you a summary. The summary is available online. But a pretty simple and an easy fact here was that in case clear instructions, directions are given to you, you do not understand them, then it does not entitle or entail to enforcement. Another simple example of the same is, in case if I do not speak Hindi and I am a regional language speaker, and there has been a matter against me in a court where Hindi is the official language of a different state, then in those circumstances also I tend to do something which I don't understand, I cannot be held liable under law. So there are different grounds, but they have to be very strong. Last of the defenses which are there, it is pertaining to that in case there are two or three reasonable interpretations coming out of the orders. What it means is basically that if the contempt of any order declared by the court and the order seems to give more than one reasonable and rational interpretation, and the respondent adopts any one of those interpretations and works in accordance with that, then he will not be liable for contempt of court. So basically, in case if there are two to three reasonable interpretations which coming out of, you know, an order of the court, and I act according to one of them and not all, then in those circumstances, I cannot be held liable for contempt of court. Right. Lastly, I'd like to come now on the fact that, you know, in case if there is a compliance order, basically means in case whereby an order was passed for contempt and the XYZ individual was required to follow that order to the word. However, in operation, when that order is enforced, it's not possible to comply with the same, right? And that can be taken as a defense. What has to be seen in that regard is that you cannot show that it was just difficult to enforce or comply with the enforcement. There is a mere impossibility on account of which you could not comply with the order. Thus, difficulty would not be an excuse, but impossibility would be one, and one would have to prove that. Now I'll come to the second aspect of contempt, which is your criminal contempt. Now I explained what criminal contempt was in terms of broad brushing. Now let me tell you in detail what it is. According to Section 2C of the Contempt of Court Act 1971, criminal contempt is defined as publication of any matter by words which are spoken, written, by gesture, by signatures, by signs, by visible representation, or doing of any act. And there are three factors under this, you know, which are included in this definition. And these factors which are included are scandalizing or tending to scandalize, or lowering or tending to lower the authority of any court. First factor. Second factor, there is a degree of biasness and interference or tendency to interfere with the due course of any type of judicial proceedings. And third is obstruction or tending to obstruct or interfere or tend to interfere with the administration of justice in any particular manner. Scandalizing the court, pretty simple, pretty interesting. It could be direct, it could be indirect. I spoke about it earlier also that such a contempt could be direct, indirect. It could be a media house reporting outside the court, alleging the court or the administration of justice or the procedure of justice, lowering the authority of any court, casting of aspersions which are in a bad manner, which are not in good taste. They are not said without any prejudice, without any malified intentions. They are used to the contrary with a malified intention. So any of these activities which are done with an intention, with a purpose, or with the effect of such a law, is it's going to cause damage in any of the three ways which are mentioned, then they are not at all going to be held in good taste, and it is scandalizing for the court, and ultimately it will lead to contempt. Mere casting of aspersions on judges in their individual capacity as human beings would not tantamount to contempt of court. It would only be if in a particular proceeding the individual is holding that position and as a judge is presiding over those proceedings and the court is being dishonored or the honorable judge's position is being dishonored, only in those cases will such a thing or such a contempt take place. right? In your personal capacity, you can have a defamation case against any two parties in India, and thus the rule of law prevails, right? So I might be a serving judge, but if I'm not in that matter where such a contempt has happened, I cannot be offended. That would be in my own personal capacity. If I have a dispute with an XYZ individual, or XYZ individual defames me, or I file a counter application to that effect. Right? Now, what is the punishment for contempt of court? Now, there was a punishment which was accorded by the Supreme Court recently of ₹1 on Mr. Prashant Bhushan. And that is one which took the world media, in fact, our media, by the scare, that why such a small punishment? Now, let's read out what is the provision and how is it allowable by the court to do so, and what is the maximum they can impose here in case someone is found guilty of contempt, right? So Section 12 of the Contempt of Court Act 1971 deals with punishment for contempt of court. High Court and Supreme Court have been given the power to punish someone for the contempt of court. Section 12(1) of this Act particularly states that a person who alleged with contempt of court can be punished with simple imprisonment, and this imprisonment can extend to 6 months. So a minimum period of XYZ amount to a maximum period of 6 months, coupled with a fine which may extend to ₹2,000, or inclusive of the punishment. What it means is basically you can have either of the two, which is you can lay a monetary order in place, or a monetary penalty, which can be up to ₹2,000, or you can have imprisonment, or you can have both. However, an accused may be discharged, right? Or the punishment that was awarded to him may be remitted on the condition that if he makes an apology, and this apology should satisfy the court, then only can he be exempted from the punishment of contempt of court. What this particular sentence means is that if the accused made an apology in the bona fide way, in a particular way, which was genuine, which was correct, which was heartfelt, which was somewhat sanguine to the matter in hand, then such an apology cannot be rejected on the ground that it is conditional or qualified. So for all the listeners out there, basically, we've been hearing that, a punishment was awarded to one Mr. Prashant Bhushan, who's a renowned, superb lawyer, activist, etc. In the field of law, I would say a senior gentleman with a lot of history behind them in terms of good legal work. So someone with that capacity, when he was ordered to tender an apology, it meant was that they were supposed to be given a bona fide or a genuine apology to that effect. That is what the court meant by it. If anybody who's guilty of contempt tenders an apology with the heartfelt condition and with the intention, then such an apology generally the court never overrides. Our judiciary is pretty lenient in those matters, and it's a welcome example in common law and otherwise that we have such tolerance and legal tolerance that you do not see so many contempt of court cases in India. And I am pretty sure someone who's been averse to court proceedings would know how people do behave in these courts. So hats off to the judiciary for having that patience and keeping everything in place as far as the common law is concerned. So I would say anybody who is guilty of contempt of court, coming back to our topic, can take forward this defense and can tender an apology which is very bona fide and genuine, and it should not be remitted until unless it is being done with malafide intentions. Another interesting proviso to the Contempt of Court Act is that the court cannot impose a sentence for contempt of court in excess of what is prescribed under the given section of this act, either in respect or respect of itself or a subordinate court to that effect. Pretty simple, sentencing cannot be more than what is permitted as per the rule of law. It has to be in line with those, in line with powers the court has and the act has, nothing beyond that. Right now, let's look at some of the remedies in terms of, against the order of punishment. There is a section 13, which was added to the Contempt of Court Act of 1971 after the amendments which were made to it in 2006 and the Contempt of Court Amendment Act came. This section 13 particularly stated that contempt of court cannot be punished under any certain circumstances or certain cases as mentioned below. So there are two clauses. So there are two factors. Clause A of Section 13 states that Contempt of Court Amendment Act reads that no court under this act shall be punished for contempt of court unless it is satisfied that the contempt is of such a nature that it is substantially interfering or tending to substantially interfere with the due course of justice. Right? So, pretty simple, pretty easy to read through. This is clause A. Clause 1. Clause B to that effect is that the court may give the defense on the justification of truth if it finds that the act was done in public interest and the request for invoking the defense is bona fide. So anything which is done on the common law principle of attainment of truth and done in the interest of public with a bona fide and a genuine request, then under those circumstances, there could be no punishment for contempt. These grounds or defenses which I am narrating or speaking about are also there in the Canadian common law. They are defenses with regards to freedom of speech and expression, but they are interpreted to apply even to contempt of court proceedings law as I speak here. To the contrary, in Canada, what they talk about is that contempt is that there is a very good, well-established defense. If there is reasonable reporting being done, if it is done for attainment of truth, if it is done for democratic principles, or to participation in the democratic process of elections, etc., or if it is done for the interest of public and for the truth finding cause with a degree of reasonability. So pretty simple here and common to what we speak in the common law parlance. Thus, you cannot be punished for that, right? How do the contempt proceedings actually continue or take place? Right. So there are particularly two sections, section 14 and section 15, which talk about how the contempt proceedings will take place. Right. One talks about particularly proceeding in the face of the court of records, and the other talks about proceedings other than court of records. Court of records, for all our listeners out there, are basically courts. That is the Supreme Court, the highest authority of court. So the Supreme Court has the inherent, jurisdiction and power to punish for its contempt. The court of record can thus deal with matter of contempt by making their own procedure while exercising the contempt jurisdiction by these courts, which is the Supreme Court. The only case to be observed is that the procedure adopted in these cases must be fair and reasonable, in which the alleged contemner should be given full opportunity to defend oneself. If the specific charge against the person who is punished for the contempt is distinctly stated and he is given a reasonable opportunity to answer and to defend himself against, such a charge, then only he'll be liable for contempt of court, and the court proceeding particularly only runs against him. Where the person charged with the contempt under this section applies, whether orally or in writing, to have the charge against him tried by some judge other than the judge or judges in whose presence or hearing the contempt is alleged to have been committed, and the court is of the opinion that it is necessary in the interest of justice that the application should be allowed, it shall cause the matter to be transferred before such judge as the Chief Justice may think fit and proper under the circumstances of the case, or placed before the Chief Justice with the statements of the facts of the case. Pretty simple. Procedure has been explained. What it means to say here is that Supreme Court is the court of record. It has the inherent authority to deal with it. There is a procedure listed down. This procedure can be made given to your facts, case and circumstances specific to that particular matter. It also entails and states that in case whereby one is doubting the fairness of the procedure and the proceedings in the court of law, then the person can ask for transfer, and the transfer will be accorded as mentioned in the procedure and the proceedings mentioned here. Now we'll talk about something which is contempt which is committed outside the court and the jurisdiction of court, right? So what are these types of contempts, right? So criminal contempt is actually the contempt which is committed outside the court. And section 15, clause 1, specifically deals with notice of criminal contempt by court of record, such as Supreme Court and High Court. Now, following manners can be taken by the Supreme Court and the High Court for cognizance of the criminal contempt. And these matters or manners when such a criminal contempt can be taken outside the court are: on the motion of court of records, on the motion of the Advocate General of the Supreme Court and the High Court, if any person proceeds the motion with the consent of the Advocate General in writing, if the law officer who is related to the High Court for the UT of Delhi as the central government notifies the proceedings and the motion, then it can be considered as a contempt outside the court. Thus, in any of the manners, if it is brought to the notice of the court through those mediums, the contempt has taken place outside the court, they will be taken up in this particular method and manner. Right? Section 15.2, which is there, it particularly states that in the criminal contempt of the subordinate court, the High Court may take certain actions in the manner given in this Act. Now, I'm going to talk about contempt by a third party to a proceeding. This is a pretty important aspect, that in certain specs, it is a third party, not the main parties, which cause contempt. Right? Let's look at what these contempts are and what are the interesting case laws on the same. Right? If a third party has a part to play in the offense, then the third party to the offense may be guilty of contempt of court, and the proceedings can be initiated against that person. Right? So there is an established principle in common law on contempt with third parties. It states that it is not necessary in law to show that a person who has breached the order of the court can be liable for contempt of court. The only necessary thing to confirm his liability for contempt is to show that the person knew of the order which was breached. An important case law on the same would be one of M.S. Gataraj Jain and Sons versus Janki Raman, where it was stated about the third party to the proceeding that if a third party to the contempt petition found to be a willfully disobeying the order which is given by the court, then he or she cannot prevent the court from restoring the status quo. I'm just giving you some of the summaries which I found online. You can actually go onto the case and find in detail what these summaries are. But generally, third parties will also be held accountable if they were having knowledge of the court order and they behaved or acted in a particular manner which violated the principles of common law regarding contempt of court. Thus, as far as civil and criminal contempt is given, I have just covered another certain set of proceedings and the manner. In the third episode on contempt, we'll be talking about contempt by a company. We'll be covering criminal contempt in terms of defamation and how defamation proceedings will work. Then we are going to talk about the limitations and certain amount of landmark judgments and cases which came out in terms of contempt. And then I'm going to give you a parallel analogy between foreign jurisdictions in terms of Canada, in terms of UK, in terms of US, as to how they operate and where India stands.
Thank you for listening to Know Your Kanoon. Catch Know Your Kanoon on the IVM website or the app or anywhere you get your podcast from.
I hope you enjoyed that show. I'd like to thank our sponsors this week, Intel. It's been a great week on the network this week. If you haven't been paying attention, please do listen to some of the shows. We had Chetan Bhagat. This was the first returning guest on Cyrus Says. Do check that out. Great, great, great episode. We had Palak Zatakia on Advertising is Dead. Really interesting conversation was had with Varun. We had another crossover on the Habit Codes. Zarina Punawala showed up over there to have a discussion with Ashton about anxiety and pressure. Begin the Journey with Ashi Vidyarthi continues to kill it. Please definitely do check it out. An old friend, Vijay Koshi, was on Storytellers and Storysellers. Do check that out as well. And I'd like to mention one thing. If you're a Tamil speaker, you should definitely check out our podcast, Kadai Podcast, Punyan Selvan. Kavita Jeeva has done a fantastic job to finish up her first story. It is the last episode, which just came out last Monday. Do check it out if you speak Tamil. It is an incredible achievement. Please do check that out. And with that, hope to see you again next week.
Have you ever wondered how successful people do their thing? How do they navigate the challenges they often face? Are you wondering about the future of restaurants, film, education, technology, and everything else in between? Hi, I'm Gauri Devidayal, best known for being one of the brains behind The Table, an award-winning restaurant in Bombay. One thing my life as a restauranter has given me is the opportunity to meet with some truly inspiring people, most often just by chatting with strangers at the community table. And that's what this podcast is about. It's about learning the new dimensions of business and understanding how different people swim this sea. It's an opportunity for me to pick their brains and ask them all the questions on my mind, whether it's about learning from their past experiences or talking about future trends. Through their journeys, stories, and insights, I hope you too, like me, will come away inspired and energized. So come, join me every Wednesday with your favorite drink, because this round is on me.